Okay, we have two parshios today, and some important concepts that appear in these parshios. Parshas Bahar, in general, is really very filled with a lot of important momentous topics, including Ribbis and Onah, and many things related to that. It's really one of the most significant aliyahs as far as Hilchos Mamonos. Here, the fourth aliyah is pretty short in terms of Sukkim, but there are a number of concepts here that are in a specific context, which is not so relevant to us at the moment, but there are points that are derived from here for other areas of halacha that are, and also certainly as far as the message is concerned. So let's try to take a look quickly at some of those psukim. So first of all, the aliyah starts with the word kiyamuch, kiyamuch achicha. So that is a phrase that appears a number of times in this parsha, and that's reflecting on the fact that sometimes an individual will falter, so to speak, will become poor, and then we have usually, in the other context, it's about the obligation that we have to support them and to make sure that we can keep someone from falling into that position. So here in this aliyah, essentially there's kind of a conflict between two values, because throughout the parsha, so you have this value that we should help people not fall into poverty. And here, there's an additional issue that this aliyah is continuing a theme that's explained in the pasuk right before, the haaretz lo simacher letzvisus, that the ancestral portions are not supposed to be sold forever, are not supposed to be released into somebody else's possession in an ongoing way. That's the general translation of the term. There are others as well. A lot more to say about that, but that's from the previous aliyah, so we won't spend too much time on it. But that's the context for this aliyah, that given that the original owner of the land has an ongoing connection to it, even if he has to sell it, so then that has to be addressed, and what comes out of that. So that's what this aliyah is talking about. So the aliyah begins, Ki yamach achicha, u'macha me'achuzaso. So because he becomes destitute, so he sells from his landed property. And the Torah's Konim has a comment here that this is context specific, that the Torah is emphasizing here that it's only in that kind of a situation that somebody would sell their landed property. They should only do it if they are in a situation of dire need, that they're about to become impoverished. And other reasons, for example, just to do business or to deal with needs that are temporary, that can't justify selling the achuza. And the Rambam in Hilchos Shemitah and Yovel, Perek Yud Aleph Gimel, Yud Aleph Gimel writes that it should be only if a person can't eat. If a person is so desperate, he can't get basic sustenance, so only in that context should he sell such land. Now, what's interesting is, he also has a comment in Hilchos Deis, in Perek Hey, Halacha Yud Beis, where he talks about things that are relevant outside of this context, and today as well, where he writes that one should not sell his field to buy a house, or one should not sell his house to buy metalin. And the Mefarshim try to figure out, where does that come from? So the Torah Tamima suggests that it sounds like it comes from here, which is interesting, because then that changes the context. So in the context here in the Pesukim, it sounds like the issue is the specific nachala that one has in Eretz Yisrael, that is meant to stick with his family, and he shouldn't let that go. But the Rambam, if indeed he gets this halacha from here, this halacha that one shouldn't sell his land, or shouldn't sell his land in order just to get movable property, and shouldn't sell his field to get a house, shouldn't sell his house to get movable property. So it's a broader comment about the kind of responsibility a person is supposed to have, and to recognize that to sell something very significant in order to purchase something that is temporary is a mistake. And therefore, we actually find the halacha puts an age limit on who's allowed to sell karka, because there is a concern that even beyond the normal das standards, that we're dealing with something that goes to your basic legacy, even outside of Eretz Yisrael, the concern is that one may not be in a state of mind to act responsibly. And there was actually an interesting machlokas a few years ago between Rav Asher Weiss Shlita and Rav Yitzchak Lubitzin Shlita about whether such a standard should be applied also to someone who wants to donate an organ. If somebody wants to donate a kidney or something like that, should we say that this is the kind of decision that requires a higher level of Gemiras Das, just like selling karka, and therefore it shouldn't just be that a person who's a bar mitzvah, a normal standard for godless, that shouldn't be enough. It should be that they are older and able to be established as somebody who can take on the consequences of more serious decisions. I remember we were met with Reb Zilberstein, he talked about this, and he said that the concern is Honolulu. What does he mean? It means that we're afraid that somebody will sell his ancestral property so that he can go on a vacation, and that's very transient, and then the vacation will be over, and he won't have his ancestral property. So does that apply to something like giving a kidney? So I thought there, by its very nature, that comes from a place of seriousness and a place of mitzvah, so maybe that shouldn't be compared. So I have a whole discussion back and forth about that, but this is related to what the Rambam is recording here. And if that's connected to these psukim, that's interesting. It's not just about Yonach and Eretz Yisrael, but it's about the recognition that it takes a certain level of seriousness and appreciation for just what is more significant, even within the realm of Gashmias, and what is more transient, and responsibility requires that you have an appreciation for that. Did you?
So what age, I don't know who says who, but what age is
so it talks about being 20, without getting into all the details, but that's drawn from this area. So here also the language of Me'achuz also. So here, in a related point, so the Taurus Kohanim also has a comment about that, that the language is Me'achuz also, meaning from then, but from the Achuza, but not the whole Achuza. And here also is saying that even though we just established that one should only be selling here at all, under dire circumstances, because they're really completely about to become impoverished. So even given that foundation, still it shouldn't be your whole achuza, it should only be part of it. And the Gemara Maseches Erchin, which has a different approach to this, and Afkof Chesumar Aleph, so there the Gemara adds that it's a kal v'chomer from Davoha. So if you want to dedicate something to the Beis HaMikdash, so you're not allowed to dedicate everything that you have, and that's a whole discussion in itself. We know that when it comes to tzedakah, so there's a limit, a person is not supposed to give, a person of average means is not supposed to give more than a chomesh, because we're worried they're going to become impoverished, and the Rambam has a language that is specific to Hekdesh, where he goes even further than that. So here the Gemara says that we have such a halacha by Hekdesh, a person is not allowed to just give everything he has. So, says the Gemara, kal v'chomer, so just for your own needs also, so you have to hold on to something, and you shouldn't give away everything, even if you feel that it's very necessary, so that you can be seen from a kal v'chomer from Gavoa. And then the halacha, Gemara in Kedushin, darshins the rest of the pasuk, that the pasuk goes on to tell us that if this has happened, then ubo go aloha karove love, v'gal esmim karachiv. So here, this individual had to sell it out of the family in order to make ends meet. But another relative can come and redeem it and keep it closer to the family. So here, we emphasize closeness. So HaKarov, the Gemara says in Kedushin on Daf Chaf Aleph Min Aleph, that the closest relative has the highest priority. And the language of Vigaal, so he shall redeem it. So what does that mean? He has to, he can. So that's a machlokus in the Gemara over there. And we paskin it's a rishus, that he can, he's not obligated to. So the Tar Tmima observes, so if he's not obligated to, it's a rishus, so then what's the chiddush? So the chiddush is that the buyer cannot object. And that just like there is this right of redeeming that comes to the original owner, so too a relative who comes to redeem also can do so even against the objections of the buyer. And the pasuk continues, v'ish kilo yelo goel, v'sigi yado u'matza kadeh gulaso. And if, let's say, a person doesn't have a relative who's able to redeem it, but eventually he gets back on his feet, so now he is able to redeem it. So here, maybe Alpi Derech HaDrush, the Parisosid quotes from the Chiddush Arim and from others, that this idea, Ish Kilo Yelo Goel, a person doesn't have a relative who's able to be a redeemer, so then it goes on to say he's eventually able to afford it. So the Chiddush Arim said that if somebody has no family to help them out, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu steps in and helps them out. So a person who's in such a disadvantaged position, so eventually HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help him get back on his feet, and he will be able to afford it. And this language, V'sigi Yodo, the Gemara has a comment in Maseches Erechin on Daf Lamed Amid Beis, that it means specifically that he actually can afford it on his own, and not that he has to borrow money in order to do it. So then the pasuk continues, v'chishev eshnei memkaro, v'heshev esha'odev l'isha shermachalo, v'shav lachuzaso. Then he has to figure out, okay, how much is left, because he had it for a certain period of time, so then we'll subtract the value that he had, and he was only going to have it till Yovel anyway, so he calculates how that all fits into the original price, and whatever's left, so this is what he has to pay. This is part of the cheshbon. The parasha also talks about onos mamon, about charging accurately, not overcharging or underpaying, so this is a part of the discussion. I have to try to figure out exactly what the proper value is and not to go off in either direction. So here also, this emphasis on Le'isha Shemachulo, so that Gemara and Erechim there also on Daflam Medem Bebeis, a little bit earlier, the Gemara has a whole emphasis here that you see that the original seller is part of this din here, that not only does he have the right to do this, even if the buyer is not interested, but he also always has the advantage. So if the value changed, for example, so if the value went up, so then the original seller gets to buy it back at the price that he sold it at. And if the value goes down, then he has the right to buy it at the new price. And if the seller sold it to, if the buyer sold it to someone else, so then he is able to buy it from that guy, and the price depends. So if the new guy bought it at a lower price, he buys it from that price. If the new guy bought it at a higher price, then he buys it from the original price. So he always has the advantage. Here again, a halacha that shows up in a different area where the Mefarshim try to figure out where it comes from. So the Rambam in Hilchos Sechiros in Parakei, Halacha Zayin, writes that if you rent out a house to someone and that person wants to rent it out to another family of the same size, going to have the same basic conditions, so then he's allowed to do that. So what's the mucker for that? The Gos Maimi writes that the mucker is from here, because the selling of a house that goes back in Yovel is essentially comparable to Schiris, because it goes back eventually to the original owner. And yet, apparently, it's still possible for the buyer to sell it to a new buyer. And then the original seller will have to deal with the buyer, but apparently he doesn't have the right to stop the first buyer from selling it to a second buyer. So too, apparently, when you rent out a property, so then that person has the right to sublet it as long as the conditions are going to be similar, and that seems to come from here. Hi.
But we're really saying it's secure because, like, because the new owner, the buyer who will have to get back Yovel, he can't just do whatever he wants with the property. Like, he can.
Oh, okay. So that's a great segue. So that's like an infomercial question. So that's the next question. So it's interesting. So that directly leads into the next pasuk. So that's the last pasuk here. The Leah v'im lo matziyado de hashiv lo v'hayim minkaro b'harakona oso achnasa yovel v'yatzu biyovel v'shav lachuzaso. So the Leah ends that if the original seller is not able to redeem it, so then he holds on to it until Yovel, but then Yovel, so it goes back. So the Aliyah ends with these words, V'shav l'achuzaso, it goes back to his possession. So the Yerushalmi in Ar Masechta, in Gittin, in Parak Daled, Halacha Tes, the Yerushalmi writes that V'shav l'achuzaso, it goes back complete. Now you may have thought that maybe this purchaser, he has the right to do whatever he wants to it. Maybe he can dig ditches, and maybe he can make permanent changes. So it sounds like from Yerushalmi that no, that's not the case, that he has to return it whole. So some point out that if we do assume that this is basically a temporary sale, so the Rambam in Hilchos Mechira seems to contradict this, because in Hilchos Mechira in Parachov Gimel Halacha Hayim Vav, so the Rambam talks about somebody who buys a field for a set period of time, and there he says that that person is able to make changes and can build things and can do changes to the karka itself that will affect it, and he can dig into it. So the Ravid and others, they ask, where did he get that from? So the Magen Mishnah, a little hard to understand, as it hurts me when the Magen Mishnah says he gets it from Yovel, because he was assuming, like your question, that the purchaser up until Yovel can do whatever he wants. But the problem is that here, as Yerushalmi tells us, the Pasuk is teaching us otherwise, so it's a difficult limud. So the Torah Tumima suggests that really Yovel is different than selling it for a set time because of the language of the Pasuk, that the Shav L'Chuzaso is telling us a Chiddush that it has to go back complete. So maybe Taka, that is the source of the Rambam, because of this din, because the Havamina and the Yerushalmi was that somebody who buys land that goes back in Yovel would have the right to make changes, and the pasuk comes to teach us not that way. So apparently the default is that yes, that normally if you had some property that would eventually go back to the original owner, it would nonetheless be possible to make these changes. So maybe Taka, this pasuk is indeed the source for that. Okay, so now let's switch over to B'chukosai. So we'll get a little bit of that, some very important dinim that come up in Revi of B'chukosai. So the Aliyah begins there. This is Parak Chav Zayin Vayikra, Pasuk Aleph, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor, Dabro B'nei Yisrael, V'yamaret Elehem, Ich Kiafli Neder, Be'erkecha Nefashos LaHashem. So here we have the halacha of Erechin, which is Erechin, is a difficult concept here. First of all, the language of Kiafli, which we find in the context of a lot of such personal commitments that one takes on. So Hirsch comments here and elsewhere that it's from the language of Pella, it's a wonder, and it means that it comes as an expression of free will. And he emphasizes that this whole parsha here of Erechin is a reference to optional donations. They don't have any obligation connected to them, and they also can't atone for anything. They're completely their own concept. And he notes there about how the Mikdash is not looking for people's money, it's not looking for riches, it's looking for neshamos, it's looking for commitments of people. So for whatever reason, they feel motivated, they feel pushed to give such a dedication, so then there's a parsha of that. But this is not an obligation, and it doesn't address anything else. So the whole concept of Erechin, that is discussed in these next few psukim, so it's a little difficult to relate to. So it mentions various categories of age and gender, and four different stages as far as age, as to what their value is. The individual is dedicating their value, or they could also dedicate somebody else's value, and dedicating that to the Beis HaMikdash. So of course, the whole idea of assessing people numerically like this is a difficult one, and the whole notion of assessing men more than women. So here, the notion is there's some kind of abstract market value that one is having in mind, and it's noteworthy. Rav Hirsch has the whole discussion here about the symbolism of the different numbers and what it represents. You can take a look. It's a little bit hard to relate to. But he does emphasize the fact that you see that the only cheshbonos here are age and gender, and doesn't say anything about any other qualities that may affect the value. So sometimes when we use the issue of ke'eved hanimkar bashuk, use the standard of figuring out what a person would be worth if they were sold on the slave market. So there are all kinds of other factors that could impact their value. So here, it seems like it's more generally symbolic, and it has to do with how broad categories are perceived on the utility market, so to speak, but not in the same sense as a slave. And the notion apparently being that a person has that kind of a recognition of these categories in mind when he wants to dedicate such a concept to the Beis HaMikdash. The whole parsha here is the Chiddush. Rav Asher Weiss in his Sefer Al HaTorah, he just came out with an enhanced version in the past year or two of his Sefer Al HaTorah, a greatly expanded version of Sefer Al HaTorah. I think this essay was in the old version also. So he has an essay there about the concept of Erechin, and he notes that it sounds like this is a Chiddush Din, this whole concept, and it's not just an example of Nedarim, it's not just a detail of Nedarim, that if somebody should take a Neder, like you have throughout Maseches Nedarim, somebody takes a Neder, and there are all kinds of Mishnayos that tell us, okay, this is what kind of thing he would have in mind, he would mean this, he would mean that. So one might think that that's what's going on here also. If one would take a Neder to give the personal value to the Beis HaMikdash, how do you figure out what that means? So psukim are there to tell you what that means. But it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like this is not a detail in Hilchos Nedarim, but rather it's a separate concept. And that's what it sounds like from the Rambam, who counts it as a separate mitzvah, and the Chazon Ish emphasizes this in the Brisker Rav. So it sounds like that's the case, even though the Rambam, although he does count it as its own mitzvah, but in Hilchos, Erechin, and Mishneh Torah, so in the first halacha, he says it's michlal nidrei hektish. So that makes it sound like it is a detail of nedarim. So Rav Asher Weiss addresses that he thinks that's just because of the language, the pasuk. The pasuk does use the word neder here, so therefore he puts that in. But it still seems to be the case that this is a separate concept, that's its own chiddush, and that's what it sounds like from Yisach Ronan, who discussed this, and he talks over there about what various nafkaminas would be. He quotes also an interesting comment of Rav Yosef Engel in a Sefer Gevura Shmonim, where he has 80 terutzim to one kasha. So there, in Os Mem Tes of the 80, so he says there, based on Adiyuk and earlier sources, that if somebody says, Erki Alai, somebody says, so my value, I'm taking on a commitment to dedicate that, so that creates a certain kedusha on him that he has to now redeem by paying off. So Rashi Weiss talks about that. He says it's a difficult concept, it's probably not true. You have a similar suggestion in the context of a pidgin aben, the baby before the baby is subject to the pidgin aben, that maybe there is a certain kedusha that has to be redeemed, but that's also difficult, it's also unlikely to be true, especially because we see here in the parasha of Erechin that you can also take on somebody else's erech. So the idea that they're going to now have a kedusha on them, so you have no power to impose a kedusha on somebody else, which is actually derived from this aliyah also. We'll get there in a moment. So it's hard to say that that concept is the case, but it's a interesting idea. So, okay, so these psukim, they go through all of the different values, so up to pasuk ches, and the pasuk says, once again, in its different forms, sayim machu, but let's say the person is not able, he's poor, he's not able to pay the whole value, machu me'erkecha, we had midol, lifnei ha'kohen, v'herich oso ha'kohen, al pi asher tosik yad ha'noder, yarichenu ha'kohen. So then, the person has to pay what he can afford. If he's not able to afford the whole value, so how do you figure out what he can afford? So the Kohen has to evaluate and has to see what indeed his Hesek Yad is. And the Gemara in Erchin Adav Kodalim Ralev says this is one of the sources for the idea of Misadrin the Balchov, that sometimes you have a person who owes money and the Beis Din may need to confiscate from him in order to pay off the people he owes, but we try to make sure that he shouldn't be left totally destitute. So we have to figure out what his basic needs are and how to then a lot from there, what should go to his creditors. So the Gemara says that this is derived from here, that we see that even when somebody took on this dedication to the Beis HaMikdash, but now he can't afford the whole thing, so we evaluate how much we could pay, how much he could pay, and we don't just say, okay, if he's able to liquidate all of his assets, then he'll be able to pay, and he'll be left with nothing. So we wouldn't do that. We wouldn't make him pay everything. We would take everything that he has, we would assess based on what his needs are and what he's able to afford beyond that, how much he's able to give. So this is the mucker for the idea of Misadrin Lebal Chov. So here, it's actually this aliyah, it's a little longer than the previous would be in Bahar, but in this aliyah, you essentially have two masechtas, you have two whole masechtas here. You have Masechtas Erechin and you have Masechtas Temura. So that comes up next. So here that pasuk test, which is over to somebody who is makdish shebehema, and behema she yakriv mena parvam Hashem kol sheyitem mena Hashem yakodesh. So the whole animal is going to be kodesh. And here in pasuk it tells us lo yachlifenu lo yamer oso tov bara ora betov v'yim hamer yamir behema behema v'hayahu smarasi yakodesh. So here, if a person has dedicated an animal to the Beis HaMikdash, and then he decides that actually he regrets having dedicated that one, so he wants to switch it for a different one. So he's not allowed to switch it, and it doesn't matter whether it's a better one or a worse one, we'll talk about that in a second, but either way, he's not allowed to try to transfer the Kedusha from this animal to a different animal, and if he does, so there's a knas, so to speak, or it sounds like a knas, that they both become Kodesh. So he didn't succeed in releasing the first one from the Kedusha, but the second one is also Kodesh. And Rav Hirsch has a whole long discussion here where he notes that this is a fascinating idea. It's a particularly severe concept because, at least according to one opinion, the Gemara discusses in Torah Daf Yizayin, that a person would be Chayiv even if he does this Bishogeg, which is certainly a different standard from everything else in the Torah. So he has a whole explanation about the contrast between this and pidgin, which is what comes after this, that when it comes to pidgin, so if the animal has a mum, so then you are going to have to transfer the kedusha to a different animal. But he notes that the language of how you do it is different. That when he talk about pidyon, so the language is on the animal that was already supposed to be brought as the karban, and that you want to bring that kedusha onto a new animal. And when it comes to tmura, the language that's used is focusing on the animal that's chulin, and that you want to make it holy. So he explains, Refersh, that it's a fundamental misunderstanding about the role of a kapara and a karban. That a person who thinks that he can just take this kedusha and put it onto a different animal, so he doesn't understand what's going on. It's ki'ilu, he thinks that a Kadosh Baruch Hu needs this animal. So, okay, you won't take this one, I'll give you a different one. But if he understands that the whole idea is, like the Ramban discussed, he doesn't quote the Ramban, but I assume that's what he's referring to, that the person is supposed to see, when there's a kapara coming from a korban, he's supposed to see that animal as being in his place, so he's supposed to identify with this animal who is representing him, and the notion that he can just switch that for something else doesn't make sense. It's a lack of understanding of the whole concept. It's as if a Kadosh Baruch Hu needs the animal, so you can trade it for something else. So that fundamental misunderstanding has a backfiring effect, and it actually makes both animals kodesh, as the pasuk indicates. So that idea of hu tmarasi a kodesh, so is that a mitzvah? So the whole discussion in general. So here we clearly have a lav, we have a lo saseh, that we're not allowed to do this act of switcheroo. It is a discussion whether there's actually two lav in here. So lo yachlifenu v'lo yomero. So and Tosfos discusses, is it that there are two sets of malchus, or is there only one set of malchus? What is the reason? What's the reason for the double language? But is there also a mitzvah saseh? So do we also say that v'hus merosu yakodesh tells us that that should be counted as a positive mitzvah? So some of the moni ha-mitzvahs do count a positive mitzvah here also. The Rambam counts a positive mitzvah. The Sefer HaChinuch just has the negative mitzvah. So Rav Asher Weiss has a piece about this also in the Sefer Menachos Asher. So he discusses that point, and he thinks it's not really a fundamental machlokus how to relate to it, but it has to do with the shita about how you count mitzvahs. That the Rambam is counting this as a mitzvah because, like we see from Hilchos Tumah, he has a whole stream of mitzvahs about Tumah. So there, it's telling us that to follow the dinim of the Torah is something the Rambam also counts as a mitzvah. So it's really just about semantics. So to create a little synergy here for us, and to go back to the beginning of the year, exactly. So this may relate to our very opening shir, good chazara moment here. Go back to the very first day, and with Siyam language, you try to connect things back to the original. So if you remember, at the very beginning, we spoke about the fact that the Moni HaMitzvos counts Gerushin as a mitzvah, and then we posed the question of, does that mean they think it's something that, under any circumstance, is actually an imperative to do? Or is it just that this is how one does it, if that's the situation? So the way we understood it, it sounds like from the Rambam that it's not actually an imperative, but it's just being described as something that has these rules when those rules are called upon. So that would be consistent with what we just said, that the Rambam understands that a parsha in the Torah, when there's something that is regulated, even if it's not necessarily something to do, so that is called a mitzvah. So the same thing, he counts that as a mitzvah and he counts this as a mitzvah, that would be consistent. And maybe to stretch a little bit more, so here the chinuch not counting as a mitzvah, so the way we understood the chinuch in the context of Gerushin required a little bit more of a interpretation, but that he did see it as a circumstance where there are sometimes a positive to a divorce thing, some kind of an imperative or a desired action, perhaps implying that he's only going to count it as a mitzvah when there is something like that going on. So, therefore, here, in this case, he doesn't count it as a mitzvah, say, so maybe that would be l'shitaso also. So a little bit of synergy going back to our very first year. It's also interesting that this whole idea, that's a little bit surprising perhaps, that this applies, as Pasuk makes very clear, Pasuk spells out, that it's not just if you try to switch a better animal for a less valuable animal. But even if you go in the opposite direction, even if you're going to take a inferior animal and switch it for a positive animal, so that's also going to be a violation. So here, the Rambam happens to give a whole drasha about this in Mishneh Torah, in Hilchos Tumur in Perek Dal Halacha Yud Gimel. So he gives a whole little speech about this. I'll just quote a little bit from his language. He says, "Royil hisbonin behem." So we should ponder here that chomash atayoch li tein lo tam. If there's a possibility of giving a reason, so it's kedai to do that. And he says, "Yirah li shazesh shamar kasev v'hayahu tmarasi yakodesh." This idea that the Torah says that both the original animal and new animal are going to be holy. So ke'inyan shamar v'makdi shiral spesov yosuf mishkas ve'erchalav. That's similar to other dinim that we find here in the same parsha, that yard the Torah l'sof machsheves adam. So the Torah figured out the way people think. K'sas Yisro harash et hevesh l'adam no to laharves kinyado v'lachas amamono. That the nature of people is they want to hold on to their property and they want to increase their property and they don't want to give anything up. V'yafal pi shenadav hikish. Even though a person may have already made a commitment, he took a neder, or he dedicated something, still, it's possible that a person will change his mind, and he's going to want to reverse it, and to redeem it for less than it's worth. So Amar Torah, in Padli Atzmo Yosef Chomesh. So the Torah says that if he wants to redeem it for himself, so then he has to add a Chomesh. V'chein imhikta, now get back to Tmura, v'chein imhikta shbehema kedusha saguf, shem yachzerbo. So if a person consecrated an animal with kedusha saguf, maybe he'll change his mind. The cave in Shani Yochel of Dosa, but it's not going to be possible for him to redeem it. So what will he do? Yachlifena b'pchusimimena. So then he'll switch it for an animal that is less valuable. So okay, so that explains why you can't do it for such a situation where the animal is less valuable. But now the Rambam goes on to address why it's true even in the other direction. Why does the pasuk explicitly say that even if it's more valuable or it's better? So it says the Rambam, v'imti tein l'arushus l'hachlif harab b'yafeh. If we were to allow that, okay, if you're going to improve it, then you can switch it. That we allow you to switch a worse animal for a better animal, if that would be the case, so then, yachlif ha-yofi b'ra, so then a person will indeed do the other also, and he'll switch a better animal for a worse animal. V'yomer tovu, and he'll say that, yeah, I think this one is better. So l'fikach sasim makas v'fanav, so therefore the Torah closed off that route, shlo yachlif, that you're not allowed to switch no matter what. You think it's better, you think it's worse, either way you can't switch. V'konso hichlif, and made a knas, that if you do switch, that v'yomer v'hayahut morasi ha-kodesh, that there's a knas, that this is both going to end up holy, so you're not going to gain anything. V'chein ha-ladvar, k'il l'ocha v'tishu l'takin de'osav, so in the Rambam is a whole mussishmus here, so this is part of what the Torah does in order to make sure that people will improve their midos. V'rov dinei ha-Torah, einon ela itzos mirachot migodol ha-itzah. And many of these dinei ha-Torah, or most or many of the dinei ha-Torah, are really there in order to address such things. So a fascinating comment to the Rambam, and be the fact that he's going to such lengths, very noteworthy. So there is, we've talked a few times about the concept of a siag min ha-Torah, about the idea that there could be a mitzvah that's min ha-Torah itself, it's not a rabbinic addition, and yet it really functions as a safeguard for another din of the Torah. We've talked about that a few times. The one notable example is the understanding of the Ran of Bali Ra Bali Matzeh, that the Torah prohibits owning chametz on Pesach, so that we shouldn't violate the real problem of eating chametz on Pesach, so it's an Isser Daraisa, it's really there as a safeguard. So this topic was really made famous by Rav Yosef Engel. Rav Yosef Engel has a list in his Sefer Lekach Tov. It's called Imatzinu Siag Min HaTorah. Do you ever find anywhere that the Torah itself gives you a din that's really a safeguard? And then rattles off a whole list. So there was also a Sefer Tshubas Yad Sofer, which was written by one of the descendants of the Chasam Sofer. So he says he's also got his own list. He independently compiled a list of such things. And there are some things on his list that are not in Rav Yosef Engel's list. And then the manuscript is missing something, so his grandson wrote Ha'aretz on the bottom, called Yitzhak Sofer, and then he added a few other things that he thinks on the list. So between the three of them, so you have a longer list. But on the Yad Sofer's list, he quotes this Rambam. He thinks that apparently the idea of Hu Tmarasi Yakodesh, and that it doesn't matter whether it's for better or for worse, either way. So maybe that's an example of the Siag Min HaTorah, that clearly what we're really afraid of is that a person is going to switch a good animal for a bad animal, but we prohibit even the other direction, even switching a bad animal for a good animal, as perhaps kind of a siag. It's a different type of a siyag. This is not a whole separate mitzvah that's there to protect something else. It's really more of a detail of an existing iser, and the fact that the iser doesn't distinguish. It's really more of what you would call a lo plug. But as other svarim point out, the whole notion of lo plug is really a siyag. That when we don't distinguish between situations, whether or not they seem to be applicable, we say it applies across the board. So that's really a type of siyag. We're saying that you don't have the right to distinguish even when it might seem logical to distinguish. So if the dimin haTorah that issues itself in a clear lo plug, in a actually explicit lo plug, going out of its way to say, and don't think that it's okay in the opposite direction, we're prohibiting it in both cases. So lo plug is a type of siyag, really. And maybe this is an example of a siyag min haTorah. So very interesting idea. So just we'll just wrap it up. But then after this, the Aliyah goes on to talk indeed about this concept of pidyon, when an animal does receive a mum and can't be sacrificed, so then it does have to be replaced, and that's legitimate. So the pasuk used the word tmeya. B'im kol behemah tmeya, asher lo yakruvim imenu karban l'Hashem, behemenis of behemah tmeya koin. So Hirsch notes that it's not clear why the Torah uses the word tmeya when it really means balmum. This is really about the animal receives a mum. So the rest of the Leah talks about evaluating that, then adding the chomesh, which we just saw the Rambam had explained that then also in Hilchos Tumura. And the last pasuk says, you know, Makdi Shigos Beso, V'yasim Chamishis Kesef Erkech Alav, V'hayolo. So here, this language of as Beso, so the Gemara understands from here that the important din of Eino Da Makdi Shdavir Sheino Shalo, that a person doesn't have the right to consecrate something that belongs to somebody else. You can only consecrate your own property. So if you dedicate your own property to the Beis HaMikdash, it becomes holy. That's Beiso, but not somebody else's house. So Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch has a comment here that you see that it's not some kind of magical incantation that you just say words and all of a sudden it creates a status, that it reflects a person's das, so a person who really owns something and has control over it and decides to dedicate it to Beis HaMikdash, so then it takes on Kedusha. So that becomes its own case, but the idea that it should just be some kind of magical incantation, so that's not how Hekdush works. So there's a lot here in these parashios about how we relate to our commitments to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how we relate to our commitments to others, how we interact with others, and the whole unity of that package and how they interact with each other. So very important yesodos, so pay careful attention to these two parshios. There's some pretty scary stuff in it as well, but also much that is meant to be elevating, and just like Maseches Gittin, the scary stuff is there to preserve us for the wonderful stuff, and we'll hopefully be able to focus on that, and that should indeed uplift us and guarantee us the brachos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Should have a wonderful Shabbos.